Yeah, the disembodied American voice is exactly what I need. And it's a cue, in a sense, for the first thing I wanted to say, which is to tell you about Orson Welles. He had a radio show on the in the United States for many years. And in one episode, he said to the audience, "I'm going to divide you into two parts. Everyone else and you." And that's what I'm trying to do here. I want to talk to you individually, if I can. And I know there's lots of yous, but I want you to feel that it's a personal message, a communication, because that connection is really important. I'm going to be using the idea of you quite a lot in my presentation, and I want you to assume that I'm talking to you, with you. So first of all, a bit of context. I am a scientist and I'm a non-theist. And I have to say that the idea of prayer troubles me. It bothers me. And I wonder if it bothers you. So maybe in the conversations later, we will find out. If you asked a Quaker, what do you think about prayer? They might say, which Quaker? I think it's complicated. And I want to communicate some of that complexity in the way that I'm presenting this conversation. So maybe because it's complicated, we don't talk about it enough, or maybe we find it's just an awkward topic to talk freely among ourselves. And I think this is a marvelous opportunity to do just that. I think humans have been praying for at least 6,000 years, possibly 3,500 years. And there's a lot of evidence for that. And so you could argue that it's deeply, that the urge to pray is deeply embedded in our psyche. I wouldn't say that it's part of our evolutionary story, but it is undeniably a human essence that occurs throughout the world, throughout history. And there must be good reasons for that. You could ask the question, well, does that mean that everyone prays? And in the UK, that is not the case. Well, although more than 50% of the population apparently at some point during their lives admit to praying, and during crises, obviously, the frequency of praying increases hugely. Even among the people that would identify themselves as non-theists. If you look at nations across the world, there's huge variations in the intensity of prayer, daily prayer, for example. The highest incidence of, as it were, of daily prayer is in Nigeria, and that's 95% of the population. And the lowest is China, which is 1%. And clearly, there are cultural as well as religious reasons for those huge discrepancies. West Africa is higher than East Africa. West Africa and Middle East, including Afghanistan, I'm sure, have high levels of prayer, daily prayer, at least 80%. Europeans, Western Europeans, less than 10%. And United States, which you would imagine was similar to Western Europe in some ways, 55% daily prayer. So huge discrepancies, and we're quite interested in those discrepancies because they tell a story. And of course, in many of those countries, prayer is multiple times per day. So what we can assume right now is that there are literally millions of people praying as we are in this conversation. I'm going to present this as in a Socratic format, so as a series of questions. And I hope you're not irritated by that. I hope you're challenged by it in a good way. And I hope that among all the questions that I'm going to be asking, there are questions that really lodge with you in your imagination, and that you want to keep on thinking about, possibly just in your own terms, in your own life, but also more immediately, perhaps in the group discussions and in the wider discussion within this conversation. So you could try to answer the questions as I'm talking, or you could make notes, or you could just see what comes out of all the, these questions that I'm asking in the discussions and in your life beyond this conversation. And I think there are 65 questions, but please don't be worried about that. It's not a test. You don't have to answer all the questions. And in fact, I think many of the questions are unanswerable. And maybe that is the point that I'm trying to make. I also want to, in a sense, overwhelm you with the sense that this is a complicated story and with so much uncertainty that we are still struggling with. So I'm going to now launch into those questions and see what happens. And I'm going to group them into four groups. The first group is just some general thoughts about prayer. And there are about 10 questions in this group. And the first question is, how do you interpret the word prayer? And I think this immediately is difficult because it is open to many interpretations and possibly misinterpretations as well. Is it a conversation with God? In which case, if you're non-theist, well, presumably there are implications for you. Is it a communion or with your own spirit, perhaps your soul even, or is it something else? And again, I think we've got 65 people in the group at least. There's a question for everyone, by the way. I've just worked it out. And I think probably everyone has some interpretation of prayer that we'll possibly get to hear about later. If you don't believe in God, then does that mean you can't pray? Maybe instead you perform an invocation or have a moment of reflection or supplication. So maybe there is something that you could loosely be called prayer, but you wouldn't necessarily want to describe it exactly in those terms. Do you think prayer is transactional or relational? If you're in conversation with God or with yourself, do you need something to come out of that, or is it something that you're quite happy to be part of, but without any agenda? When you are praying or supplicating or invocating, do you have a sense of entitlement? Because you might argue, well, I'm taking this time and creating this moment. It would really be quite nice to have something back. Is that the deal? Do you agree with Antony the Great, Antony of the Desert, who said that those who pray best are those who know that they're not praying? In other words, if we're consciously praying, does that sort of devalue the experience? Would it be better if we actually were not thinking this is a moment of prayer? This is just something that emerges naturally from what we do in our lives. So should prayer be deliberate, or could it be an accidental event in our lives? Do you pray? Now, that question directly to you is quite intrusive. I think you might be even slightly offended, because I mean, it's almost asking, like me asking you, how much do you earn, or what is your age, or some other intimate question that you'd rather not answer. So maybe this is another reason why we don't talk about prayer very often, because it's actually for some people quite an uncomfortable idea. I don't want to be impertinent, but I think we may as well ask the question. And maybe this is one of the first questions that you will end up asking yourselves in the groups. Does prayer change us, or does it change situations, is another question. And that's a big question. Or could it be both? Is a religion or a culture that requires prayer, or a ritual that involves prayer, is that a better type of prayer than when the prayer is spontaneous? At this point, I just want to say I'm not answering any of these questions myself. I could do, but I really am much more interested to know about your answers, or whether that you're struggling with a question and that you don't have an answer. It's really pretty much irrelevant what I think. I'm just the messenger, as it were. So I was just asking you whether you think prayer that is required or a part of a ritual has more or less value than a prayer that might be spontaneous. Do you welcome the injunction, let us pray? I'm sure we've all heard that in our lives. Have you said your prayers? That's what parents used to say to children before they went to bed. And what about the call to prayer that you hear in some cultures? Now, in my biography that you may have seen on the website, it refers to some of the work that I did in Borneo. And there was one night when I was working in a forest, miles from anywhere, and it wasn't dark, and I had to make the measurements in the dark because, well, I won't go into details, but that was necessary. And I finished the measurements, and then I realized I was completely lost in this forest. And I was slightly frightened, actually, and I was really disoriented. I was concerned that I would not be able to find my way out of the forest. And then I heard the call to prayer from a nearby town, from an imam, and that immediately provided orientation. I don't know if you, I wouldn't want to interpret too much into that, but for me, that moment of the call to prayer was a moment of revelation. How many pray in a way that sort of is dependent on the words of others? In other words, if we're praying, we are using words like the Lord's Prayer, for example. And how dependent are we on that? And is that a valuable type of prayer? Or would it be better and more appropriate for us to use our own words? If you were praying at all, and let's just imagine that you would do or could do, what would you be praying about? In surveys, it seems that mostly people tend to pray about their families, their immediate friends, and maybe financial worries, things like that. But way, way down the list are international crises. And that's way down the list of priorities for prayer. And I find that quite interesting and possibly a bit concerning as well. So will poverty, climate change may be down the list. If you don't pray now, for example, because you're a non-theist, would you consider praying under certain circumstances? For example, if somebody was very important to you, a loved one became ill and the doctors were not able to help, would you turn to prayer? Would you see the world in a desperate state and maybe think about prayer? If you were on a plane that was rapidly descending and you were in the brace position and you were going to crash, would you start praying? If that plane had been hijacked by people who were also praying, but to a different God, perhaps, how does each of those prayer work out? That is a dilemma that you may have come across before. So that's the first group of thoughts of prayers about the general idea of prayer, and just to set the scene, as it were. The second group is the one that I think many of us as friends are really quite familiar and comfortable with, which is the idea of petitionary prayer. So we're praying for ourselves and often by ourselves. So do you think a personal prayer brings you a sense of peace and calm? I think I already know the answer to that among friends. Do you feel that that's a prayer, or whatever you call it, which is like a prayer, does that refresh your soul? Does it empty you, or does it fill you in some way that really is nourishing? Do you accept Richard Dawkins' argument that there is a possible placebo effect on your body and your mind in doing that? And if so, well, does it matter? Maybe it works. And if you pray at all, are you using words or are you using silence, or is it a combination of both of them? If you are praying to God, are you hoping that God will change something, or are you seeking to change something in yourself? And if you're changing yourself, why do you want to involve God? I mean, maybe you could just do that without any prayer. You may know Penn Jillette, who's a magician, famous for the Penn and Teller series on TV. He's a well-known atheist, and his argument that I heard quite recently was that it's okay to talk with an imaginary power, but you need to be sure that you know it's imaginary. So that is his position. And in other words, it works. And he says also that every evening or every night when he goes to sleep, he does a Penn's guilt roundup. So there's something that we could all think about, you know, a guilt roundup where you consider all the things that you wish you'd done differently during the course of the day. Is if God is all knowing, why do we need to ask that God for anything? So I suppose an advocate for prayer, including Christians, for whom it is very important, and other in other religions too, they might argue where they have the choice of praying, that when they choose to pray, it is because they want that relationship with God. And the act of praying forces that relationship. In other words, it prevents us from neglecting or forgetting God. It reminds us of our own vulnerability, and it keeps us humble. So the question is, do you buy that? If you're giving thanks in prayer, and that is a very common type of prayer, the prayer of gratitude, how does that work? The evangelist Peter Grieg, I've got his book here that I've read and enjoyed. It's called How to Pray, and I commend it to you. I thought I was going to dislike this book, but actually I enjoyed it, and it's beautifully written, and it's an argument obviously for prayer. And he describes the experience of a friend who'd had a baby fairly recently and was observing the baby, and she just said a silent whispered thanks. And then at that moment, Pete Grieg describes a wave of love flooding into the room. And this woman, who had previously been an atheist, at that moment converted to evangelical Christianity. And I would say that's a great story. And I hope it's true in some ways. But I would like to spoil the story by suggesting that maybe she was experiencing postnatal endorphins. So that's a scientific explanation. It's not as exciting or as rewarding as the one that is more mystical. If you are a non-theist at the moment, what are the chances of you praying at the moment that where you are approaching death? Do you think this is a time that we should maybe consider that? Or in Dawkins' terminology, is that actually just going to be a placebo and maybe that's okay anyway? But what are the risks of us praying as an alternative, as a replacement of medicine that could otherwise do important healing? Intercessionary prayers, the next group, and this is where we're praying for others. So Quakers talk about upholding others in the light, and some would argue, including I think many in this group, that upholding others in the light is a type of intercessory prayer where we're praying for others. How do you feel that that works, and what do you imagine that you're doing if you're part of that process? Would you welcome the knowledge that someone was praying for you? Christopher Hitchens, who you know was a well-known atheist, still is well-known, of course, died. And as he approached death and he knew he was dying, many Christians set up a Everybody Pray for Hitchens Day. This is September 2010. And he refused to take part, for maybe for obvious reasons. So in other words, he did not welcome that, but some people had a lot of fun with that. Our whispered prayers, if we do them, may seem feeble, foolish, and futile against the sheer volume or magnitude of the world's problems. Think about Afghanistan, for example. So does that invalidate our prayers, or does that make them more urgent and more necessary than ever? So among the scientific studies that have been done on prayer, the most famous one was done by Harvard researchers who were studying 1,200 patients who had been admitted to various hospitals in Massachusetts area, and the patients were all had a heart bypass, and they were informed that they would be prayed for or not prayed for by people outside the hospital. So the group that were informed that they would be prayed for was one group, but they didn't do any better than the group that said they might be prayed for, but they weren't prayed for, in fact. So there was some uncertainty about that. The same outcome, in other words, knowing that you're being prayed for or that you are not being prayed for, or there may be some uncertainty about whether there was any praying at all, didn't seem to change the outcome in terms of your recovery time. But the worst group, as it were, the worst performing group that had the longest recovery time were the group that were told that were being prayed for, and then the sneaky people did not pray for them. So that was the worst outcome. So that was quite an interesting study available online if you'd like to look at it. And by the way, Harvard University last week appointed for the first time a chief chaplain to the university who is a non-theist. Last group of questions now. The efficacy of prayer is something that a lot of us ought to be thinking about if we care about the idea of prayer and praying. And some of it can be tested by science. So we want to know, does it work? I mean, if millions of people are praying and have always prayed in human history, why did they do it apart from being asked to do it? What's in it for them? What are the outcomes? And can science help to determine those outcomes? And I know Trevor on the online made a comment in response to my plea my request for comments from all of you that he really would like to know what the scientific evidence was. And I have to say it's quite limited. And the science, doing the science on prayer is notoriously difficult because it's difficult to unpick prayer from everything else that is going on. So would you only accept prayer if you were convinced that the science convinced you that it was working and that had a full explanation for that? And if it's petitionary prayer that we do for ourselves, as it were, then there is limited evidence. We know that, cortisol levels may drop, we may heal more quickly, and our mental health may be improved. That is true, and it could be measured scientifically. But that's also true of yoga and meditation and Tai Chi as well. And it's also difficult to, infer divine intervention from those studies. Actually, from the studies where people were praying very intensively and in a required way, there was heightened levels of neuroticism in some groups. Is praying conditional? Would you only pray if there was an outcome that could be measured? In other words, if prayer worked? Is praying just an example of positive reinforcement? In other words, if you believe something, then praying is part of that belief, and it will be compounded and supported. And especially if you're mostly focusing on success and ignoring failure, are the outcomes of prayers imagined or otherwise? Cause and effect. I don't know if you're, I'm sure everyone in the audience is familiar with the idea that correlation is not necessarily causation. I teach statistics, so I talk a lot about this with my students. And one great example that might relate to some of you is that the divorce rate in Maine, and also probably in Minnesota and Sarasota, is strongly negatively correlated with the consumption of margarine. So there you go. So there are ways to demonstrate the effects of things if we're really determined, but a lot of this is bogus science. I'm almost at the end of my questions now, just in case you're feeling a bit overwhelmed. The idea of miracles or highly exceptional events, the mathematicians got involved with that as well. There's a so-called Littlewood law from 1986 that suggests that actually by the law of chance, every month there will be an unusual event that some people might call a miracle. If people happen to be praying before that, then they might relate that to the as evidence of their prayer. Do those who pray believe that God can disrupt the laws of nature? This is a very important question. C.S. Lewis, that you will know, was a great advocate, a Christian, a great advocate of prayer, suggested there are limits to what God can do. So in other words, only if our prayer does not require the laws of nature to be broken, then there may be a good chance of those prayers being met successfully, as it were. And so C.S. Lewis also suggested that some prayers were good and some were bad. And the bad prayers were, according to C.S. Lewis, only prayed by children or savages. It's quite a thought, isn't it? Do you believe that some types of prayer are higher or lower than other types of prayer? Are there different qualities of prayer that have different amounts of different chances of success? The last question, friends, is one that is relates to all that's gone before, which is, would any of us now in this wonderful gathering deny the importance of prayer to those for whom it is important? Thank you, friends.